fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome to the show. So glad that you're with me. It's December the 9th. It is the Feast of St. Juan Diego. And he's a really, really important saint to me. He has so much to do, of course, with Our Lady of Guadalupe, and her feast day is coming up in just a couple of days on the 12th, on Saturday. What a great Marian week for feast days, right? I mean, yesterday was the Immaculate Conception. Today is St. Juan Diego. Tomorrow's a big one, too, which totally escapes me right now. Of course, this Saturday is Our Lady of Guadalupe. And Loreto, Our Lady of Loreto. How could I have forgotten? That is tomorrow. So, wow, big, big week. And here's what Mary said to Juan Diego. Listen, put it into your heart that the thing that disturbs you, the thing that afflicts you, is nothing. Do not let your countenance or your heart be disturbed. Now, that is great advice for us today from Our Lady. Of course, she's watching over us in her motherly way. 1-888-914-9149 is a toll-free line for The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Once again, 1-888-914-9149. Well, I have this question for you. What has Our Lady of Guadalupe meant to you in your life? I mean, she is, I think it's probably my favorite Marian apparition, Our Lady of Guadalupe, and she means a lot to me. And I want to hear your thoughts on this. 1-888-914-9149 is a toll-free studio line to call. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about the background of St. Juan Diego and how Our Lady of Guadalupe came to be known. And really, this changed the world, not just Mexico, but it changed the world forever. And it all started in the year 1519, when a very small Spanish army, relatively small, landed in Mexico, quickly subdued, defeated the Aztec people who lived there. And of course, a lot of the Spanish invaders were a little bit on the cruel side and didn't have very much respect for the indigenous peoples there. But we can't also forget the cruelty practiced by the Aztecs themselves with their culture of human sacrifice, tens of thousands of human sacrifices every year. And many of the Spanish invaders, of course, were purportedly Catholics. In fact, I'd say probably all of them were Catholics. And they didn't exactly they weren't exactly great ambassadors for the faith with the way they were treating people. Well, a few years later, 5 years later, in 1524, 12 Franciscan priests were sent to Mexico with a different message, a message of Christ. And unfortunately, they just weren't able to get a foothold among people in the culture. Part of it was because of the way they were treated by the soldiers. And, you know, when they heard about Christ, you know, they viewed Jesus as a quote-unquote European God. And they didn't want to have anything to do with him. But all of this, of course, was about to change thanks to Our Lady. And it's really an incredible story. 8 to 10 million Mexicans converted, the Aztecs of Mexico converted to Catholicism after the appearance of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And it all began on this day, December the 9th, 1531, almost 500 years ago, when Juan Diego, and by the way, Juan Diego is one of the few who had been converted by the Franciscan missionaries. He had become a Catholic Christian. And as he was walking, he heard singing coming from the top of Tepeyac Hill, which is, of course, near Mexico City. And suddenly the singing stopped. He was like, wow, this is really beautiful. Where is this voice coming from? Suddenly the singing stopped, and he heard a lady's voice calling out to him, "Dear Juan, dearest Juan Diego." So he said, well, you know, where's this coming from? So he climbs up the hill, and he sees this absolutely beautiful lady dressed in raiment that shone like the sun. And she introduced herself to Juan Diego as the Immaculate Mother of God. It's really interesting. We talked about this yesterday on the show, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. You know, aside from, you know, the church proclaiming this, you know, church not being able to err in matters of dogma that we all must believe as Catholics. And of course, this has scriptural roots. We talked about this yesterday. You can download the podcast. We really did a deep dive into the apologetic background on the Immaculate Conception, this Marian dogma, one of the four that we have to believe to hold the Catholic faith. So you can download the podcast of yesterday's show from relevantradio.com, or you can stream it, or go to the Relevant Radio app and you can listen to it there, or go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever. We're everywhere. We're all over the place. And we really did a deep dive into that. And one of the things that I said yesterday was that in a lot of the approved Marian apparitions of the church, she identifies herself as the Immaculate Conception. And here she kind of does it again, the Immaculate Mother of God. And she explained to Juan Diego why it was that she appeared to him that day. She said, "I want a church to be built, you know, in my honor here on this hilltop. And I want you to go to the local bishop to tell him this." And his name was Juan. His name was also Juan. Juan de Zumarraga. And Juan Diego dutifully obeyed. He went into the city and he told the bishop what he had seen. However, you know, and really it's hard to blame the guy. He didn't believe Juan Diego at first. He's like, "Get out of here. You're seeing things." Anyway, so Juan Diego goes back to the lady and he says, "Look, you've got to send somebody else here. You've got to send somebody who's a little bit more, you know, weighty than I am. Somebody who the bishop's actually going to listen to. You know, who am I? I'm just a poor peasant." And the lady listened very carefully to him, but she responded in a very firm way as well, friendly but firm. "No, you're the guy. Like, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, obviously. You know, you are going to be my messenger. I want you to go to the bishop and make this request known. You have to convince him." So the next day, Juan Diego, this is December the 10th, Juan Diego goes back to the bishop, tells the story again. And the bishop's like, "Okay, all right, listen, you got to give me some evidence here. You're obviously very persistent, but you've got to give me some proof that this is actually happening, that there is this lady, she's speaking to you. Okay, show me the goods. You know, where's the beef here? Give me some evidence." And so he goes back. He goes back to Tepeyac Hill, tells the lady he's asking for proof. And so Our Lady says to Juan Diego, "I want you to come back tomorrow, and I'm going to give you a sign that's going to convince him." Okay. So that was his plan. But on his way home, of course, Juan Diego was met with some very, very tragic news that his uncle, his beloved uncle, had become very, very sick and was on the point of death. And so that just completely discombobulated him, and he did not go back to Tepeyac Hill to see the lady the next day. In fact, he was looking for a doctor to take care of his uncle. But unfortunately, it seemed as if nothing could be done for his uncle and that, you know, his situation was getting worse and worse and worse. And so the following day, which is December the 12th, which was a Monday in 1531, Juan Diego puts on his very rough tilma cloak, because it was a little bit cool out there. It was sort of winter time, what passes for winter down there. And, you know, a little chill in the air. And this is a very rough garment, by the way. It's almost like a potato sack, almost. And he's going to try to find a priest to pray for his dying uncle, give him the last rites. Things are looking really grim. And he's like, "Listen," he's saying to himself, "I don't want to run into this lady. I don't want to be delayed. I've got to find a priest." So he takes actually another route than the way that he usually walked. He didn't want to go near Tepeyac Hill. But Our Lady met him anyway. She came down from the hilltop and ran into him. He's obviously distressed. And she asked him what was wrong. And Juan Diego tells her, and she reassures him, saying, "Look, don't worry. Your uncle is already healed." And this is when she says to him, you know, "Don't fear this illness or any other illness or any other distress, any other calamity. Am I not here who am your mother?" Beautiful, beautiful words from Our Lady. And so he's like, "Okay, well, I'm going to take your word for this, but what about this sign for the bishop?" And she says, "I want you to go back up to the top of the hill, and you're going to find something there that you can take to him." So he goes up to the top of Tepeyac Hill, and there he finds kind of a little garden of very sweet-smelling dark pink roses. And Juan Diego didn't realize this at the time. These roses were a very particular type of rose. So he picks these flowers, and Our Lady arranges them in his tilma. He kind of rolls up his tilma cloak with the flowers inside and says, "Go take these to the bishop." So he goes to Bishop Zumarraga's residence. He gets past security. He gets in there, and essentially he unrolls his tilma and lets the flowers fall out. And he doesn't quite understand why, but the bishop isn't looking at the flowers at all initially. He's looking at the tilma, because on Juan Diego's tilma, of course, there is this miraculous image that is there, the miraculous image of the lady just as she had appeared, live on the hilltop. And everybody in the room falls to their knees. They begin to pray. And right away, the bishop says, okay, this will do. As far as signs go, this will do. Tell me where this church needs to be built. And we're going to get started on this right away. And by the way, the uncle, having been healed, Our Lady had appeared to him as well. And she tells Juan Diego's uncle her name. She says, I am the perfect virgin, Holy Mary of Guadalupe. And only 2 weeks later, which was the day after Christmas, this chapel, you know, which was, of course, the beginnings of what is now this massive church on the site, this initial chapel was completed, and the telma, with its image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, was placed over the altar. Now, when people started to see this, remember, the missionaries had had virtually zero success trying to convince the native Aztecs to embrace Christianity. Only a few people had converted. Well, after this image got out there, word started to spread. There was no Twitter, there was no Facebook, there was no social media, no Instagram. I mean, they would have been totally Instagramming this, right? If that were available at the time. But that's okay. Word of mouth was good enough. And people were flocking to see this image on the tilma because of the way that Mary appeared. She was dressed in a culturally relevant way that totally reached them. She was dressed, actually, as an Aztec princess. Her skin tone was like theirs, not like the Spanish. Her skin tone was darker. She had a black sash wrapped above her waist. And that's, by the way, what Aztec mothers wore when they were pregnant. And the image of Our Lady on the tilma, she had the sun at her back, the moon under her feet, showing the Aztecs that she was greater than their sun god, greater than their moon god, this stone serpent that they would worship, this pagan god. And of course, she's also, she has her hands in prayer, her head is bowed in prayer, and that showed them that God was greater than she. Great, and you know, St. Jose Maria Escriva used to say this, greater than you, Mary, no one but God. There is someone above Our Lady, and that is, of course, God himself, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And even the way she was standing on one leg. Why is that? All her weight is on one leg, because she's kind of meant to be depicted as dancing. Why? The highest form of prayer for the Aztecs was dancing. So people were just blown away by this, and they started taking the Catholic message very, very seriously, as you can imagine, after that. So in the ensuing years, in just a very, very short period of time, relatively speaking, over 8 million Native Mexicans converted to Catholicism. And this is really fascinating to me, because this was happening in the New World. And while this was happening in the New World, you know, while Mary was evangelizing the New World, what's going on in Europe, in the Old World, on the continent? Protestantism, the Protestant Revolution, is raging across Europe. The errors of Luther are being widespread. There's all this political intrigue. And Christianity is being, you know, torn apart in Europe, in the Old World. But here in the New World, the faith is taking root. And this is the greatest evangelistic period in the history of the church. Never before in the history of the church have this many people in this short of time converted to the faith. And the appearance of Our Lady made it happen. Just incredible. One time when I was on my honeymoon, the only time I've ever been to Europe, the only time I've been to the Old World, as it were, my wife and I went to Rome for our honeymoon. And we got to see some, I mean, you could spend months in Rome and never see everything, as you know, if you've been there. Visiting all these beautiful churches, you know, these incredible, you know, sites, the Vatican museums. It was just amazing. And it's almost too much. It's almost too much. You just walk into a random church around the corner and you see something amazing, some historical work of art. I remember, you know, Trish and I just randomly wandering into this church. We didn't know really what it was. And we see, boom, Bernini's sculpture of St. Teresa of Avila, St. Teresa in Ecstasy, you know, just incredible. Amazing. Baroque art. I love it. I know they say if it ain't Baroque, don't fix it, but I like Baroque. Love it. Love the realism. And there was nothing more real than Our Lady of Guadalupe. Anyway, so one day on our honeymoon, we decided to take a side trip. The only other place that we went in Italy that time, and I want to get back to Italy. It's so beautiful. The only other place that we went was we took a little side trip to Assisi to see the home of St. Francis. And while we were there, we just randomly bumped into this American priest. And I lost contact with him, but his name was, he went by the name of Padre Cisco. So if you're listening, Padre Cisco, hey, call the show, 1-888-914-9149. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. It's a feast of St. Juan Diego. Now, we got chatting with this guy, and he was giving some people a tour of Assisi, and he was just, like, so intelligent and so learned. He was like, hey, do you guys want to join in? I'm like, yeah, of course. So, I mean, he just gave us an incredible tour of the town. And one of the things, as we got chatting with him, one of the things he said was that he did his doctoral dissertation. He had a PhD, and he did his dissertation on homilies that were preached in Mexico after the appearance of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Can you imagine? I'm like, oh man, I would love to read that. I've lost touch with this guy, but I would love to read this because this is the time when 8 million people were converting. Like, I'd love to read these homilies, you know, how amazing. And so I'm sure it wasn't so much the preaching, but of course the image of Our Lady that really convinced people that Christ loved them, that this message is real, is so true. And of course the tilma itself is also so miraculous, not just the image. And we're going to talk about this much later, but scientists have tried to prove over the decades, over the centuries, that it's fake. But nobody has been able to figure out how the image got on the tilma. It's not paint. It's not made from ink. And all of the tests that they've done on the fibers seem to tell us that this image was all at once scorched, as they say, onto the tilma at the same moment. And there's no way that science has been able to recreate this process. I think there's a lot of similarities here in this sense between the tilma of Guadalupe and the Shroud of Turin, because scientists at NASA tried to examine the Shroud of Turin. You know, how did the image get on here? And it's a photographic negative. And again, a lot of people, a lot of scientists say this is a scorch. It's a radioactive scorch. It's almost nuclear, you know, how this image got onto the cloth. I think it's the same with Our Lady of Guadalupe. Anyways, the tilma itself, which was made out of a very rough, you know, kind of cactus fiber, usually that would have disintegrated. That would have been rotted and worn away after just a few decades, but it's still out there today. And maybe you've gone to the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe outside of Mexico City on Tepeyac Hill. Maybe you've seen the image live. And apparently there's an escalator that just goes by, so you don't really have too much time to stop and look at it, unless you know somebody who can maybe get you in after hours or something. But people tried to destroy the image. In 1921, someone tried to explode a bomb underneath it. You probably heard this story. Well, there was a lot of damage caused by this bomb, but no one died. Thanks be to God. And the image was not damaged at all. So very, very miraculous there. So there's so much to talk about when it comes to Our Lady of Guadalupe. I want to hear about your impressions of Our Lady of Guadalupe. How has she been active in your life? What do you love about this image? What do you love about the Feast of St. Juan Diego? Does he mean something to you personally? Give me a call, 1-888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We'll be back with much more on this after this break.
Facts and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, we're celebrating the Feast of St. Juan Diego. A little Mexican music for you. I almost feel like we should call Patrick Madrid, you know, and you know he's half Mexican, and he's definitely got some thoughts for sure on St. Juan Diego and Our Lady of Guadalupe. I'm sure he talked about it this morning on his own show, and you can certainly download the podcast for that one and all our fine shows on relevantradio.com. And one of the things that we were talking about during the break, you know, we were kind of fighting about, what is the city of San Diego named after? Juan Diego, St. Juan Diego. And, you know, San Diego, of course, and we have many, many listeners in San Diego. I love San Diego. I can't wait to get back there. One of the most beautiful cities in the world. Perfect weather. But apparently, San Diego is not named after St. Juan Diego, Patrick Alog, who is screening calls for us here. If I could just pull you off the phone for just a moment. Who actually is San Diego named after?
It is named after San Diego Bay, and San Diego Bay was named in honor of the Franciscan San Diego de Alcalá de Henares, whose name was borne by his flagship. So it is named after a Franciscan, just not, and a Catholic, but not named after...
Not that guy.
No,
okay.
Not Juan Diego.
Not St. Juan Diego. Okay, well, thanks for clearing that up. Appreciate that. Well, if you want to call in, if you're in San Diego, if you want to call in, it's 1-888-914-9149, or anywhere, for that matter, in the United States or around the world. That's a toll-free line for the Cale Clark Show, 1-888-914-9149. You can also tweet at me, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Or you can follow the show account, too. Also a good follow, Cale Clark Show, at Cale Clark Show on Twitter. And email, of course, is cale@relevantradio.com. We're going to go to the phones right now. Vince is calling from Wisconsin. Vince, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very fine. Our Lady of Guadalupe is, quite frankly, more or less a new thing to me.
Okay.
We had a brief story about him in our grade school readers, and then I think I forgot about him till about 5 years ago. See, this region of Wisconsin, nearly everyone is of French, Irish, German, Swiss, Luxembourg. Until recently, there really have not been very many Mexican-Americans in this region, but they are moving here. And I'm beginning to see pamphlets in the back of church about Our Lady of Guadalupe, and it used to be just Fatima and Lourdes, and I think we're all learning.
Yeah, I think that's true. And certainly she's so important to the Mexican people and so important for the Americas, too. We got to remember. And thanks for that call, Vince. Really appreciate that. Vince calling from Wisconsin, listening to the program. And, of course, Wisconsin is the home of the studios where a production team is located, in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Also home of the Packers, of course, and Lambeau Field. We've talked about that before. Lucas Holt is there right now. Patrick Alog is there right now. And when you go into the offices of Relevant Radio, and I can't wait to get there in person, you know, because of COVID, you know, travel's been kind of sketchy to say the least, you know. But I can't wait to visit there. Apparently there's a beautiful image of Our Lady of Guadalupe that greets you when you walk in the door. And, of course, the chapel, the beautiful chapel, which you've seen if you've ever watched the Daily Mass. From the chapel at the Relevant Radio Studios. You've seen this beautiful image of Our Lady of Guadalupe on the wall there. And of course, so important for the evangelization of the Americas. I think that's really, really something that we've got to keep in mind. And St. John Paul II proclaimed Our Lady of Guadalupe patroness of the Americas. And of course, he canonized Juan Diego in 2002. So St. Juan Diego, please pray for us. And one of the things about Juan Diego that I think it's important for us to know this Advent, he's one of the great saints of Advent. You know, he really shows us that sometimes God's, maybe all the time, God's going to take us out of our comfort zones. But we need to trust him. And he can work miracles through us. He can work wondrous miracles through us. One of the things that Juan Diego said to Our Lady is, you know, please send somebody else. You know, I'm not an important person. I'm insignificant. I'm maybe not worthy to take a message from you, from the Mother of God, to the bishop. But of course, the Virgin Mother of Guadalupe said, no, you can do it. You are going to do it. You know, you're the guy. You're the guy that God has chosen to bring this message. And Juan Diego obviously here is following a very long line of stories in the history of the world, in the history of salvation, where God chooses, you know, the lowly in the eyes of the world, you know, the tongue-tied, the meek, to do important work, right? I always think about Mother Teresa, you know, one of the most beautiful souls of all time. And yet, you know, nobody in the world would have picked her out of a lineup and said, you know, yes, you're the one. She used to refer to herself, she was very humble too. She used to say, I'm just a pencil in God's hand. And I always think, you know, it's very... the day that she died, I don't know whether it was on the day of, maybe you guys can remind me of that, Patrick, Lucas, was it the actual day that Princess Diana died, that Mother Teresa died, or it was very, very close to that time, but they died around the same time, and just the juxtaposition of the glamorous Diana and Mother Teresa, who had a true beauty of soul, and of course, Diana had good qualities as well, of course, but you know what I'm talking about, you know, just, you know, the humility of Mother Teresa. You know, when I think about her, I think about Juan Diego too. And God often sends you know, people who seem powerless in the eyes of the world to speak truth to power. God uses the meek in this world to confound those who are prideful. That's what St. Paul writes in the scriptures. And so God is calling you too. That's one thing we have to remember. You know, just as God and Our Lady picked Juan Diego for an important work and called him to be a saint, you are called to be a saint as well. All of us are. St. Paul says that in his letters. You know, he writes to all the church, called to be saints, to you in Rome, called to be saints, to you in Corinth, called to be saints. We're called to be canonizable saints. And we can't say, oh, I'm too lowly, I'm not smart enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not educated enough, I'm too old, I'm too young. No, get rid of the excuses. Get rid of the excuses. You know, like Stuart Smalley used to say on Saturday Night Live, you know, you're good enough, you're smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like you. God likes you. He loves you, and he's chosen you as well to bring this message of Christ to the world. So we got to do that same thing this Advent. You know, there are people that need to hear the message of Christ this Advent. And so we can be those messengers like Juan Diego. And we can, you know, this culture where human life is so cheap, very similar in a lot of ways. We haven't really progressed too much, you know, from the ways of the Aztecs. I mean, think about the human sacrifices that we're offering. Yeah, sure, we're not doing it on top of pyramids, but it's all behind closed doors, you know, in hospitals, places of alleged healing. Think about the Holocaust of abortion that's happening all the time. This human sacrifice is happening in America. It's happening all over the world. And so we've got to bring this message of life. And this is what Our Lady of Guadalupe brings to the table. So important to work for this in our own time, in our own situation, on our own street, with the people around us, our neighbors, our friends. We've got to do it. We absolutely have to do it. Now, one of the interesting things, too, I wanted to mention this about, I meant to get back to this, the roses that were in the tilma of Juan Diego. Of course, when he unrolled his tilma, everybody was captivated by the image on the tilma. But the roses are of interest as well. We should really mention that because Bishop Zumarraga, these particular roses were Castilian roses. He was from Castile in Spain, and he loved these roses. And when he was in the New World, he was sent to the New World to try to evangelize, and things were, as I said, were not going well for the appearance of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And in the year 1529, he wrote to the King of Spain in these words. He said, "If God does not act to remedy this situation as soon as possible, this land is going to be lost forever. This land is going to be lost forever." And he prayed. He specifically prayed to Our Lady to intervene in the situation. Boy, was his prayer ever answered. And he also, by the way, apparently in his journal that he wrote, he had asked for a specific sign that his prayer would be answered. And that sign that he asked for, allegedly, were these roses. "I want to see these roses from my homeland of Castile." They did not grow in Mexico. They certainly did not grow in Mexico in the wintertime, you know, on top of a hill. You know, it was very arid and wasn't the conditions for growing these types of roses. And that's, you know, one of the things that's so miraculous about this event. And so that was a really personal touch from God, a really personal answer to prayer for the bishop. And, you know, Our Lady is like that. She as a mother, she does care about us. We see this at the wedding at Cana, you know, these insignificant details to a lot of people. She notices these things. You know, she's very personal in her response to Juan Diego. She's, "What's wrong? Why are you looking downcast? You know, tell me about your uncle." She appears to his uncle. She answers very specifically with these roses for Bishop Zumarraga. This is incredible. The personal love of God for each one of us is really, this is something that really comes out in the story as well. And of course, I just can't get over this image. You know, this, I guess you could say it's a self-portrait of Our Lady in the tilma of Juan Diego, and how science has really looked at this and just found it inexplicable. And one of the coolest things that, and you're probably aware of this, I just think it's so cool, that they have done some extensive research on the image of Our Mother, and her eyes are reflected people that were in the room when the tilma was revealed, when her image was revealed. Now, that might sound incredible to you. This happened almost 500 years ago. But in 1929, the official photographer of the old Basilica of Guadalupe in Mexico City discovered, when he looked at images, the pictures that he had taken of the image, he said, "My goodness, when I look in Our Lady's eyes, I see the reflection of a man." You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. You can follow me on Twitter, at Cale Clark. We're talking about the feast day today of St. Juan Diego and Our Lady of Guadalupe. And, of course, her feast day is coming up on Saturday on the 12th. So Alfonso Marcu, who is this official photographer of the image, he told people at the basilica, you know, "Hey, listen, this is what I found in my photographs." And they said, "Listen, you cannot talk about this. You can't go public about this. Keep it under wraps. We're going to look into this." And so he obeyed. He didn't say anything about it. Well, a few years later, in 1956, an ophthalmologist by the name of Dr. Raphael Levoignet, and forgive me if I'm pronouncing that wrong, examined the eyes in the image of the Virgin with an ophthalmoscope, whatever that is. It sounds pretty impressive. And he examined the image in great detail. And what he saw was in the corneas of both of the eyes of Our Lady, he is really amazing, because it had the distortion of a normal human eye. He saw this human figure that the first photographer had seen reflected in the eyes of Our Lady. He also noted that, to him, the eyes looked alive when he examined them, like a living person. And later on that same year, another ophthalmologist certified that, yeah, these images in her eyes are exactly where you would expect them to be if they were reflected off of a living human eye. The distortion of the images is the same as you would expect with the way that the cornea is curved, you know, in the human eye. It's incredible. So investigations continued. In 1979, there's another scientist by the name of Dr. Jose Aste Tonsman, and he magnified these high-res images of the Tilma. He magnified them 2,500 times. So he really zoomed in there. This is like super zoom. And he also found more people reflected in Mary's eyes. There were more people. It's almost like when the Tilma was unfurled, whatever she saw, you know, from that image got sort of like photographed, if you will, onto the image. People that were in the room when the Tilma was revealed were reflected in her eyes. And they found a total of 13 people. And the same people are in both eyes in different proportions, as exactly as what would happen, you know, when a human eye reflects the objects before it. And so here's who they think were in the room based on what they saw in Mary's eyes. They think that they saw Bishop Zumarraga, who, you know, is very, he's an elderly man with a white beard, balding. Okay, that's the bishop. They also see this, you know, indigenous man with a beard. And that is probably Juan Diego, of course, presenting the roses to the bishop. And there is also in the room a younger man who is probably the interpreter, Juan Gonzalez. There is also another indigenous person who's there looking up to the heavens. And there is a lady who's there who's probably working in the bishop's residence. And there's another Spanish-looking guy who's there who's just kind of checking things out. And he's like, "Huh, that's interesting." And he's stroking his beard with his hand. These are all the people. And there are a few more, too, reflected in the eyes of Mary in the image. Isn't that incredible? That's amazing. And apparently also another thing that they found was a family that was there, too. A woman, a man, and several children. So that, to me, is super, super fascinating. And it's just one of the scientific proofs that show us that this image is supernatural. It's supernatural. Infrared studies, they've done those on the Tilma as well. There's other phenomena that they just can't explain. As I said earlier, it's not painted. The color did not penetrate the fibers of the Tilma like paint would. The Tilma was a horrible, you know, sort of medium for this image to be. Like, if you were going to paint, you wouldn't paint on a Tilma because it's too rough. It's going to distort any image. But the image on the Tilma is clear. It's not distorted at all. there's no natural colorings that are known to this world that made this image. No synthetic colorings were available in 1531, so it wasn't done that way. It's inexplicable to the science of its day and even to our own day. It's unbelievable. When we talked about earlier, you know, it should have been disintegrated by now. It's not. The bomb blast went off. It wasn't harmed in any way, even though the marble altar below the Telma was just shattered. It just became rubble. The windows were all broken from this bomb blast. There's a very heavy bronze altar cross that was there that was twisted. In fact, that's now under a display case, and you can see images of that on the internet, this twisted altar cross and crucifix. The Telma, though, miraculously untouched. Even the glass cover was not damaged, and no one was injured. No one was injured in this bomb blast in 1921. So there's just so many things. Also on this image, there's stars all over the cloak. And we talked about how it reflected the culture of the people at the time. She appears in a very culturally relevant way. As you know from the image, there are stars all over the cloak that she's wearing, Our Lady of Guadalupe. And they have found out that that's exactly the position of the stars in the sky before dawn on the morning of December the 12th, 1531, when the image was seared onto the Telma. It's unreal. If you look at constellation maps from that morning, it's exactly as the stars appear on Mary's clothing. Wow. This is amazing, amazing stuff. And I think this is a great thing that might get some people interested in the faith, you know, supernatural evidence for the faith. We don't need this to prove that Christianity is historical, that Mary and Jesus are real persons in history, but it is pretty neat. I must say that. You know, it's a private revelation. You don't have to buy into it, but it's, of course, approved by the church, and I think it's a great, great piece for evangelization, especially in this culture. It's unbelievable. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. If you want to call in and talk about this, talk about Our Lady of Guadalupe. It's incredible stuff. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. Toll free, 1-888-914-9149. Be right back.
Your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Well, how clever. That song that you're hearing is called In Your Eyes by The Weeknd. And of course, the image of all the people in the room when the Telma was unveiled by St. Juan Diego, were reflected, captured almost photographically in the eyes of Our Lady in the image. So yeah, very clever there. We try to be clever on The Cale Clark Show. You know, we're not that clever, but hey, when we hit on something, we got to use it, right? And I want to hear your phone calls. I want to hear what you have to say about Our Lady of Guadalupe, the Feast of St. Juan Diego today. We're going to go to the phones right now. John is calling from Sacramento, California. John, welcome to the show. How are you?
Fine, thank you. My question was that I hear that some things might have been added later to the Telma, you know, like the angel at the bottom of the picture and that sort of thing. Is there any way of knowing what's original and what it might have been added on?
That is a very good question, John. And I think you may be right about that, about the angel being added on to the image later. Yeah, I remember reading about this, but off the top of my head, I don't want to just kind of fire off something here. I guess I could Google it really quickly, but I'm going to look into that for you, and I will try to get that on the air tomorrow or later this week. I'd like to talk about Our Lady of Guadalupe again a little bit.
Do you know of, go ahead. Real quickie, do you know of any book that might cover that topic or anything that's out there?
You know, I'm sure that if you look that up on the internet, I'm going to look it up too, and I'll try to have something on the air for you tomorrow about this. I have a book, and it's funny that you mentioned this, because I have a book somewhere in my library, and I got to dig it out. I don't know where it is, because when I moved, you know, a lot of my books are in boxes, but I have a book that was written by the person who was in charge of the canonization process for St. Juan Diego. And I was like, I got to find that book. That would be perfect for today, but I have no idea where it is. It's a really interesting book. And hopefully I'll be able to dig that out before for this weekend, the Feast of the 12th. But very good question, John. I do think that is true. My recollection is that that is true. So I will get our crack staff on that right now. Patrick Alog has a very quick trigger finger for Google, and I'm sure he's already looked up the answer, actually, so knowing him. So I'm sure we'll have that for you by the end of the show, at least in preliminary form, and we can maybe talk about that
okay.
later.
Okay, well, super duper, I don't want to tie you up, and I want to thank you again.
Oh, you're most welcome, John. Thank you for calling in. That was John calling from Sacramento. Thank you for that call. Yeah, really, really important question. Patrick, nothing from you yet on this. What are you doing, man? I guess he's answering the phones, because we've got a lot of good calls coming in. We're going to go to Haleen right now, who's calling from San Francisco. Haleen, welcome to the show. How are you?
I am very good, and I would like to thank you. You have the greatest show. Thank you.
Oh, that's very high praise. I don't know if I deserve that, but thank you. It's very kind.
You do.
Very kind.
You do. And I was present when he was canonized, and it was a very... very amazing event.
Wow.
So I was present, and I was, God opened my eyes. I was starting crying a little bit, and mm-hmm. then it turned into weeping. I got off of that belt, and I was sitting in the corner and let all the people pass, and I was just weeping for a very long time. And afterwards, I felt like a newborn baby.
It wow.
beautiful. Yes.
That's incredible. So yes. you were there when
he started. Yeah, when the Holy Father came over Canada to Mexico.
That's right.
The World Youth Day in Canada. You remember that?
Of course, yeah. It was a very important day in my life, very important period in my life. That's when God started to draw me back to the Catholic Church, you know, on World Youth Day. St. John Paul II. Wow, what a great evangelist he was. Yeah, he would have flown over Canada to get to Mexico City. So, wow, that's amazing that you were there at the canonization of Juan Diego. That's incredible. That's incredible.
Well, I tell you just shortly, I was born in Germany as a Lutheran, and the Blessed Mother of Guadalupe brought me to the Catholic Church. I tell you wow. another time, it is amazing. She is truly amazing.
That is amazing. And as we talked about earlier, you know, when she appeared in the New World, of course, you know, Protestantism was raging across Europe, and you were Lutheran, Haleen, and came into the Catholic Church. So welcome home. That's amazing. That's amazing. So 100%. I really appreciate your calling.
Thank really you very much, and thank you for all you are doing.
God bless you. Thank you very much for your kind words. I really appreciate that. That was Haleen calling from San Francisco. And we're going to go back to the phones right now. Father Jack is calling from, we don't often have priests calling the show, so I'm really excited about this. Father Jack is calling from somewhere in Southern California. Welcome, Father Jack. How are you?
Just want to tell you about Our Lady of Guadalupe. In around 1980, I went on a tour basically to Mexico City. Mm-hmm. And one of the places on the tour was the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Two things happened. One thing was I went around all over taking pictures, and when I finished the whole thing, I found my camera had jammed, and uh-huh. I got no pictures. So I had to take the roll. This is when we used rolls of film. Mm-hmm. Had to find a dark spot,
yeah.
take the roll of film out, and then just to make sure, I ran around the whole place taking mm-hmm. pictures again, and then we and the tour left. And the next morning, early the next morning, I got up and went by myself down to the shrine and asked if I could say Mass.
Oh, wow.
And they had a fantastic system set up. They even had everything set up for priests to come in. And I went up, and they took me up to the balcony.
Wow.
So the balcony was clear in the back of the church, but it was actually facing Our Lady of Guadalupe. And so
oh, beautiful.
I said Mass there facing in the balcony, facing with everybody, all the people who were coming to the shrine down below. didn't even know I was up there saying Mass. Huh. And I remember it with I mean, it's a treasure in my mind and my experience. But you did say that they when they blew up the altar, I had heard, and I think there is one stone or one piece of marble or something went through the picture of Our Lady. So there's one little hole in it where the stone went through.
Okay.
But
oh, that's interesting.
Didn't damage the picture, but there's a hole down in the side or someplace on it where a stone from the explosion went through it.
So Karen Moran is
thing I've heard about.
Karen Moran just said
you can say it's not damaged, but it's got, you know, but there was a that, but it is really the first original building or the chapel or whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
It was is sinking, and when I was down there in the 80s, it was up to the windows. You couldn't go near it, and they were building. They had just built this brand new building, and it was, you know, quite beautiful.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, Father Jack, that's a great story that you're able to say Mass there, you know, facing the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And I remember those days full well with, you know, rolls of actual film, you know, and cameras in the days before digital photography. Wow, you know, it's kind of, my life kind of spans those two ages, I guess you could say. And that's awesome that you were there. And thank you for that extra bit of information, Father Jack, about the tilma. You know, with perhaps from that bomb blast, maybe a piece of that marble altar did in fact go through the image. As Karen Moran just texted to me, perhaps it's self-healed. You know, the tilma. That's amazing. So thank you, Father Jack. That was Father Jack calling from Southern California. And we're going to go really, really quickly to Angelica in Albuquerque. Angelica, welcome to the show. We just have about a minute or so here. What's on your mind?
No, I just wanted to mention that my daughter, who is 16 now, she was a gift of Our Lady of Guadalupe. My mom and I were going to Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico City to request a child, our second. And the day before, I found out I was pregnant.
Wow.
So it became a Thanksgiving. Our Lady knows.
Oh, yeah, you have a lot to give thanks for. And she's 16 now.
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing. Congratulations to you. So, yeah, there's so many miracles that have been wrought through the intercession of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and that's incredible. So thank you very much for sharing that with us, Angelica. Really appreciate that call. Well, I can't believe it. We've run out of time already on the Cale Clark Show. Man, these hours go by quickly, but we'll be back tomorrow for sure. So if you didn't get through today, please call back. We can talk about this some more tomorrow. We've got some really exciting stuff for you tomorrow. It's literally out of this world. I'm just going to tease it, just going to leave it there. That's all I'm going to say. But you are not going to want to miss tomorrow's show. So join me tomorrow. And of course, you can always download the podcast from other episodes if you've missed them. And check out the Faith Explained podcast today. You're not going to want to miss this because we dealt with Revelation and this big question that often gets asked of Catholics. Is the Catholic Church the Whore of Babylon that's represented in Revelation 17? The answer is no, and you're going to find out why. So check that out. Really want to thank Lucas Holt for producing, Patrick Alog for screening the calls, Karen Moran for work and social. See you in the next one. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.